Recent agricultural census data show that the number of small and medium-sized farms has fallen over the last 5 years.
And to put this into perspective, farm acreage remained fairly stable nationwide, but in Wisconsin, farmland decreased 4%. Only Georgia, Kentucky, Mississippi, and Alaska had similar losses.
Kara O'Connor is with us now to talk about the trend and what maybe can be done to increase interest here in farming here in Wisconsin. She's the Government Relations Director for the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Kara, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, we've heard this data, the number of farms in the small and medium-sized categories down. Is this confirming things you kind of already knew from what you've heard from farmers around the state?
It's confirming one definite trend, which is that the largest farms are getting larger. And the way that they're doing that is by acquiring land from small and medium-sized farms. On the contrary, we are seeing a growth in the very smallest farms, especially those doing direct marketing, developing niche products, and carving out unique markets. And so there are these two divergent trends.
So the biggest, we're seeing more of them and bigger, and the smallest, we're seeing a rise in those. And you can think of maybe smaller CSAs or organic farms, that kind of thing.
That's right. And the other exciting trend in Wisconsin is a growth in grazing operations. That is raising animals primarily on grass rather than growing grain to then feed to the animals. Wisconsin is really well suited to that sort of farming because we have, in some cases, steep hills that aren't very conducive to grain farming, but they're great for raising animals, and we have good forage here. So those sorts of operations are growing in importance and in numbers, but we were sad to see the loss of small and medium-sized farms.
Can you give us a sense of what these farms are like? What kind of operations are we losing here in Wisconsin?
The loss is happening in the middle. The average-sized dairy farm in Wisconsin hovers around 100 cows, and those farms are facing several challenges. They're squeezed from markets on both ends. So there's heavy consolidation in fertilizer and seed markets on the one hand. They have fewer and fewer choices, and prices for those inputs are getting higher and higher. And then they're squeezed on the buyer end as well. We have four companies that control 80% of the beef market, for example, and similar consolidation in all sorts of grain, meat, and commodity purchasing. And so when you have monopolies or monopsonies on either side of you, you're hard-pressed to carve out a decent price.
And if I've got a bigger operation, maybe I've got, a little more economy of scale to keep my costs down, and maybe I have a little more negotiating leverage with my suppliers and the people buying from me. That medium-sized farm, maybe not so much?
Exactly. We see some dairy co-ops and dairy plants, for example, that are shifting to most of their supply rather than coming from three dozen small farms, almost exclusively from one large farm. Hmm. Now, that's a good circumstance for them. They can send one truck to one farm and get all the milk they need. On the other hand, it raises some serious questions about the resiliency and the robustness of our food supply if there were a contamination issue or a failure or bankruptcy from that farm. We have a plant that's nearly entirely reliant on one farm.
I want to stay on the challenges side for a few and get into maybe some solutions in a bit. I've also seen that land prices are becoming prohibitive for current farmers in some cases and for people who might be thinking about getting into the business.
Yes, that trend is probably the single most daunting factor for someone considering getting into farming. When I talk to young people who don't stand to inherit a farm, they say, I would love to farm, but it's just too expensive to buy land. And that trend is being accelerated in some cases by things happening within agriculture, and in some cases by greater agricultural trends that go far beyond the agricultural markets. When mortgage-backed securities took a dive and suddenly became a very poor investment, those well-funded investors started looking for a new place to put their money, and farmland was looking very attractive. One of the reasons that it's attractive is federal farm policy that in some cases guarantees a profit or at least gives you a good chance of having a profit on farmland.
And we've also seen, we mentioned the statistic that our farm acreage in the state has gone down at 4%, not a huge amount in that five-year period. But are we seeing things like, metropolitan growth encroaching on farmland? Is that part of what's driving that?
It's definitely a factor. That has slowed a little bit with the economic recession. Mm-hmm. It was the concern about development and encroachment was really at its peak maybe 10 years ago. That's eased a little bit, but I look for that to ramp up again as the economy improves.
Outside of the economics of farming, is there maybe a declining number of people who would even think about farming as a profession to begin with?
Certainly. It's hard work. Mm-hmm. I talk to a lot of our members and farmers who have never taken a vacation they reminisce about the one family wedding that they went to when they found someone else to milk the cows. That is changing too, because young people who go into farming are simply demanding that they figure, or being creative about finding a way to be able to have some time off, and whether that's trading shifts with neighbors or in some cases having more family members involved in a farm. Young farmers are finding ways to manage that question. But the economics are a challenge. So again, going back to the consolidation trends and the expense of land, it's hard to make the case for getting into farming when you can't see your way to helping your kid through college or something like that.
And I want to talk about the phrase family farm. I think that may mean different things to different people. It could be a nuclear family working a farm themselves. It could be a multi-generational thing. It could be a family that owns a lot of land and hires labor. Family farm is a pretty sprawling term.
Sure. Within Farmers Union, we tend to think of a family farm as being defined as an operation where the family who owns it supplies most of the labor. And that of course, depends on a lot of factors, mm-hmm. but that's sort of how we think of it.
And for those larger or, a little bit larger in that medium-sized zone, they may have to hire some labor seasonally or permanently. Is labor cost a part of the factor here that's causing a challenge for these small and medium-sized farms?
Labor cost is definitely a factor, and for those farms that have immigrant workers, the uncertainty of immigration reform is causing them some challenges as well. And in Wisconsin, we are a little bit unique in that dairy accounts for a lot of the farm labor that we have. Those are year-round jobs. Mm-hmm. They tend to be more coveted for workers than a seasonal produce harvesting job.
Well, as if all that weren't enough, I think a lot of us noticed the gas prices went up a few years ago. How do petroleum costs on a lot of fronts affect farmers and their costs they have?
That is, again, one of those input costs that farmers have very little control mm-hmm. over. And the other big factor this year was propane. For farms were not using natural gas, propane was took a really unexpected jump, and farmers were seeing their heating costs, home heating costs, jump a lot. Dairy farmers, for example, use heat to heat the barns as well as to cool the milk. So that requires energy, and then they're putting diesel into tanks to harvest crops. Going back to grazing, as we were talking about, that is one strategy for minimizing petroleum inputs, because you're asking the cows to do some of the jobs that otherwise you would have machines do, spreading manure, for example.
We're talking about recent data showing a decline in some of the smaller to medium-sized farms in Wisconsin. Coming up after the news, we'll get into some opportunities and maybe solutions. We're talking to Kara O'Connor. She is with the Wisconsin Farmers Union.
We'll continue our conversation with Kara O'Connor about the diminishing number of family farms in Wisconsin and what we might be able to do to fix the problem.
And we want to hear from you. As a consumer, is it important to you that we have more of the small and medium scale farms in the state? If you're a farmer, tell us your story. What are the challenges facing you? What are the opportunities you are tackling? What's working? What's not working for you? Are you a young person thinking of getting into farming, either taking over your family's farm or starting a new tradition? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send an email, talk@WPR.org. Kara, we started by listing a fairly long list of challenges facing those small to medium-sized farms and the farmers who work on them. Let's get into some solutions and opportunities. What are some of the things that you're excited about that makes you maybe feel optimistic about the farms we're talking about?
We should say that despite all the challenges, Wisconsin is in a unique situation and, in fact, is in a better situation than some states with regard to the number of small farms, the number of farms in general, and the prospects for beginning farmers. First of all, we have the luck of geography. So our hills make farming with animals more applicable or more attractive. And compared to a state like Iowa or Illinois that's very flat, we've seen a lot of rural depopulation and a transition from farms having animals to a separation of animals and grain crops. Mm-hmm. In Wisconsin, we still have that connection, and I think that's very valuable. So we're lucky in that way. We have something to hang on to and a strength to work from. And there are a few ways that both in our community efforts and as well as in policy efforts, we can accentuate or try to develop that strength. One program that has been incredibly successful in Wisconsin is the Dairy Grazing Apprenticeship Program. And that program matches aspiring farmers with a mentor farmer. And one of the things that we know is that knowledge transfer is essential in helping people get started in farming. And so for someone who didn't grow up on a farm or doesn't stand to inherit a farm, having a mentor can be mm-hmm. crucial in becoming a beginning farmer. And so that's a two-year relationship that teaches that apprentice all the things that they would need to know in order to become a farmer. And we feel like that's a strength that the state could really help to fund and accentuate. Another strength that we have is a diversity of types of agriculture. And that's so important because markets shift. There will be fluctuations between dairy markets, grain markets. We've had incredibly high corn prices for the past couple of years, and that's been beneficial to our grain farmers. On the flip side, we had a really tough stretch with dairy prices. Those have recovered. And so we benefit from having that diversification in Wisconsin that some states don't have.
And then as far as meeting economic opportunities out there, you mentioned some of the very small niche farmers meeting consumer demands for specialty products, organic products, that sort of thing. Do we have room to grow in that field here in Wisconsin?
Certainly. And one of the reasons why produce and direct marketing products is attractive to a beginning farmer is that acre for acre, the profit far eclipses other kinds of farming. So on an acre of vegetables, a farmer might net $5,000 or $10,000, whereas an expected profit for an acre of grain or 1 acre of a dairy operation would be in the hundreds, not the thousands. So those produce operations can be a real benefit in getting people into the pipeline and started farming. Farm to school has been a great opportunity and one that we are hoping to see get some additional state support, for example, in the budget. And we'll be advocating for that. That's getting local products into schools. And one of the things that we know is that has a lasting impact on the choices that kids make throughout their lives and what products they buy.
We'll go to a caller now at 800-642-1234. We have Roger with us in Green Bay. Roger, hi.
Hello. I think my position is contrary to where your speaker is going on this. I certainly would not say that there's anything wrong with family farms, but I don't really value those over a corporate structure. My belief is, as a consumer and as a citizen of Wisconsin State, is that a corporate structure is probably going to involve a lot more obedience of the law when it comes to, like, immigration law, for example, and employment law. And I think it's probably a corporate structure is going to be run more efficiently, and I think that's going to keep costs down relatively low for the consumer.
Gotcha, Roger. So a bigger farm, a corporate structure keeps things cheaper. A bigger outfit might be able to more easily comply with immigration law, he says, environmental law. What's the case for having more of the small and medium-sized farms out there?
Roger raises a interesting point about legal compliance, and it should be noted that there are a lot of farms that are owned and operated by families that do choose to incorporate as an LLC or adopt a corporate structure. Mm. And for some of the reasons that he mentions, they need to comply with tax laws, employment laws, those kinds of things. And then it also helps sometimes with farm transition rather than having the assets of a farm owned by one person. And if that person dies, having to go, for example, through probate or have high estate taxes, if the farm is owned under an LLC, that may help to ease the transition. So the legal requirements for labor, as Roger mentioned, for nutrient management or environmental compliance, and for food safety compliance, apply equally to all farms, regardless of their ownership structure or whether they're owned by a family or a corporation. The benefit that I see, that Farmers Union sees, of family farm ownership and the land being owned by the people who work it, is all of the auxiliary benefits that come from community engagement. So there are members, when I think about the kinds of things that they're involved in, FFA and 4-H, they're members of town boards and county boards, on the school board. They're deeply involved in their rural communities, and that's something intangible that we think is worth preserving, and that you really lose something if the land in a rural area is owned by someone far away.
I think that's a good place to leave it. Kara, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
That was Kara O'Connor. She's Government Relations Director for the Wisconsin Farmers Union.